The next case set for oral argument is Appeal Number 30728, Kaiser Trucking versus Liberty Mutual Fire Insurance Company. Jared Nooney will be arguing on behalf of the appellant, Kaiser Trucking, and Jack Eve will be arguing on behalf of the appellee, Liberty Mutual. Mr. Nooney, you can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jared Nooney, and I'm here today representing the appellants, Kaiser Trucking, Inc., as well as David Simons. We're here on appeal today on the lower court granting a motion for a new summary judgment. As this court knows, it's a de novo review, essentially giving no deference to the circuit court's decision. At the circuit court, there were genuine issues of material fact which prohibited summary judgment in favor of Liberty Mutual. Specifically, there was an accident that occurred on or about September 8th, 2015, between David Simons, who was a representative on behalf of Kaiser Trucking, and Bianca Spotted Thunder. Bianca Spotted Thunder was the daughter of Charles Spotted Thunder, and Charles Spotted Thunder had an insurance policy in place with Liberty Mutual Fire Insurance Company. Specifically, the cause of the accident was a question of fact that prohibited summary judgment in favor of Liberty Mutual. Additionally, there was a question of fact at the trial court level as it concerns cooperation after the accident. Given there was a question of fact related to the cause of the accident, whether it was intentional or unintentional, there then was an investigation done by Liberty Mutual. The question of fact of cooperation prohibited summary judgment in favor of Liberty Mutual. Additionally, there was a question of whether Ms. Bianca Spotted Thunder received any notice or legal papers related to the underlying action before this declaratory judgment action. Specifically, SDCL 15-6-6 and 15-6-7 allows for service of the South Dakota Secretary of State via a non-motorist or someone who's been absent in the state of South Dakota for a period of 90 or more days.
So on that, go ahead, please.
Before we get further into your argument on disputed facts, I'm just wondering, are you, below you argued that Kaiser Trucking didn't need to establish, or the conditions precedent that you're now referring to were not at issue. Are you now conceding that issue, or do you have a different position? As we notified counsel that drawing attention to the footnote in Kaiser 1 indicating we didn't directly address that.
Yes, Justice Savini. As Justice Kern identified in the decision, essentially it said, I believe, it may be a condition precedent to establish the duties of the accident. And if I may then get into the letter that I received from the Supreme Court clerk on or about April 11th of 2025, which asked counsel to address specifically whether condition precedents to coverage apply in the context of a direct action by an injured party against a tortfeasor insured. And with that, SDCL 3235-74 essentially provides that a policy may not be canceled or annulled based on liability of an agreement between an insurance carrier and then, of course, damage, essentially protecting here the injured parties, which would be Kaiser Trucking and David Simons.
Well, the question is whether that's even applicable here.
Sorry, if I may understand your question. Whether the condition
is that statute even applicable whether it's a certified policy as defined under that chapter. The footnote in Kaiser 9 referred to such things that may or may not be at issue here, and I just need to know is that even an issue here.
And I believe the court said, Justice Kern said, within the decision, the Kaiser decision, that essentially the contract of insurance was not between the appellants, Kaiser Trucking, and David Simons, but rather between Liberty Mutual and Mr. Spotted Thunder. So it's appellant's position that South Dakota Codified Law 32-3574 is applicable, and for public policy reasons, that prohibits Liberty Mutual from coming in to say, well, there is no insurance.
My question, more specific, is only applicable if this was a policy certified per the requirements under that chapter. Are you contending that? There was nothing particularly raised below with regard to that issue.
And it wasn't raised below, Justice Devaney, because we never actually got to the policy, meaning the merits of the declaratory action. There was a motion to dismiss that was granted that came before this court, and then it was reversed and remanded to the circuit court. Then there was a motion for summary judgment filed. I then did an affidavit pursuant to SDCL 15-656F, asking the court to do additional discovery because we had not taken any depositions. So the SDCL 32-3574 was not dealt with at the lower court because we weren't actually on the merits. We didn't try the declaratory judgment action from the circuit court.
Well, what was before the court is whether there's any facts in dispute as to whether the coverage provisions had been met, which, you know, underlying that is the legal issue is do they have to be met and under what legal authority. So how is that? That was before the court, right, in order to grant summary judgment.
Yes, it was, Justice, but it's appellant's position. There was question of fact, genuine issue of material facts before the circuit court that prohibited summary judgment in favor of Liberty Mutual.
Are you saying you're still asserting the argument that Kaiser Trucking did not have to show that the conditions precedent or that there was a disputed fact as to conditions precedent? Because that's what I'm trying to clarify.
Yes, if I understand your question, Justice, it's the fact that essentially Liberty Mutual said that the conditions precedent were not met based on the fact that the claim was denied because they said there was not cooperation after the accident, given the fact that they alleged that Bianca Spotted Thunder did not provide them with notice of the underlying lawsuit, and then which that, of course, led to a default judgment in favor of Kaiser Trucking and David Simons.
So what's the dispute about cooperation? What's the factual dispute about cooperation that you think is
whether the Spotted Thunders cooperated? Essentially, there was a...
In what way did your filings contest that they didn't cooperate?
Because Liberty Mutual had paid monies pursuant to the accident that occurred on or about September 8th of 2015. Liberty Mutual paid monies specifically related to the vehicle that was involved in the accident based on the property damage claim. Essentially, they had paid off the lien on the vehicle and then remitted monies to Mr. Spotted Thunder.
But is that responsive to or does that relate to the specific condition precedent, which would relate to, I'm pulling it up here, but notice and papers and those sorts of very discreet types of cooperation? Cooperate with us in the investigation, promptly send any notices, legal papers received in connection with the accident. If those are the conditions precedent, what is your argument that you just don't know the answer to that or that there are genuine issues of disputed fact? And I'll tell you where I'm going because as a non-moving party, you know, you have an obligation or any non-moving party has an obligation to come forward with something that creates a genuine issue of material fact. It's not enough to sort of say it's unknown, and for that reason, we have to have a trial. So as it relates specifically to those items that are at issue, if we get to that point, what's in the record that tees that up and says, yeah, these are truly disputed? Not just that we just don't know them, but they're disputed.
Yes, Justice Laird, let me try to kind of give some background. So there was a 30B6 deposition based on a designee of Liberty Mutual. And I had asked the question, I said, you know, is your understanding that Mr. Spotted Thunder was not in the vehicle at the time of the accident? Yes. So I asked the question, you know, what was Mr. Spotted Thunder supposed to do to cooperate? He immediately notified Liberty Mutual on the day of the accident, September 8th of 2015. He then essentially cooperated to get paid under the policy. I don't know what else Mr. Spotted Thunder could provide. And then second fold, regarding the actual notice of the lawsuit, I can't tell this court whether Ms. Spotted Thunder did have notice of the actual underlying case because, again, the South Dakota Secretary of State was served pursuant to 1566.
There was a default judgment obtained against her on that, correct?
Yes, Chief Justice, there was a default judgment.
Before the default's taken, there's some kind of notice that nobody's coming in here. Liberty Mutual's not coming in. The defendant's not coming in. You know, it seems pretty clear Party B2 promptly sent us a copy of any notices, legal papers. It seems like that's a pretty good tip-off that Liberty Mutual didn't have any kind of notice. Hey, there's this lawsuit against our insured, and that's a problem under this policy. So where's the disputed fact on that in terms of whether she got notice or not? It just seems like there's no dispute of fact here that no notice was sent. And was probably even known before the default judgment was ever taken that Liberty Mutual didn't receive notice.
Well, Liberty Mutual couldn't have been a party pursuant to SDCL 5823.
Right, but if they had notice, they would have hired counsel and come in and defend it. I mean,
conceivably, yes.
I don't think conceivably they would have.
Well, you know, the other thing, and I want to, the policy itself. In that provision, Part E, doesn't specifically refer to or limit it to the insured. It says a person seeking any coverage must, and one of them is promptly send us copies of notices or legal papers received. So, you know, here, I think is this not a scenario also where if the injured party knows who the insured is, and here clearly they did through their insurer who had already been having discussions with the Spotted Thunder's insured, why could they not have provided the notice as well? And should they?
Just to make sure I understand your question, meaning the Spotted Thunder's provide notice to...
I'm talking about Kaiser Trucker now is the injured party trying to seek coverage from Liberty Mutual. Okay, the policy itself that refers to those conditions, just refers to a person seeking any coverage must. Okay, so here, was there anything precluding Kaiser Trucking? Since the return to sender letter came back from Bianca Spotted Thunder, which it seemed to put you on notice that she may not have received it, why didn't Kaiser Trucking then, as the party, as in a person now trying to seek coverage, notify Liberty Mutual of the suit?
Because Liberty Mutual had denied the claim. They had paid on the personal property damage claim to Mr. Spotted Thunder, but then they had essentially said...
Okay, well, those are two different coverage, different provisions in their policy that refer to coverage of the property damage, which are not the same in this policy, and the liability coverage. So this, in this particular claim, was with regard to the liability coverage. But isn't that that's not the same thing, is it?
It's not, Justice. There's of course the personal property damage claim and the liability aspect. Unlike the Rosso case, there was continued communications. You know, whether or not there'd be subrogation. Here, Liberty Mutual said, we're not subrogating anything. We're denying the claim. We believe we have no liability for the claim.
And at that same time, didn't they say, and if you decide to sue her, let us know?
They did, and that was, of course, discovered in the written discovery.
And so what Justice Devaney's referring to is the insurance contract appears to say that you, as a party seeking recovery under the insurance contract, have an obligation to inform the insurance company if there's this addition, this ongoing claim, which is what they asked for. Well, how am I misreading it?
You're not misreading it, Justice. But ultimately, I mean, when I sued this out, I was actually not involved in the first case. I was still in law school. When I sued this out in the declaratory judgment action matter, ultimately, at that time, we didn't have a copy of the policy. I named the wrong Liberty Mutual, and then counsel let us amend. We didn't have a copy of the policy when we brought the declaratory judgment action that is now here before this court.
Do you think that changes the effect of the policy, the fact that you didn't know about it?
I don't think it changes the effect of the policy, but I think it answers your question why there wasn't notice provided from Kaiser Trucking or David Simons to Liberty Mutual. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Gabe, you can proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I've been doing this a long time, and I got the note from the court. I brought the two statutes that you told me to bring. So that's pretty much the extent of what I have for preparation, which may be consistent with some of my other oral arguments. However, I think what the court wants to talk about is this idea of whether under 74, Section 74, there is some type of a legislative indication that an insurer cannot assert coverage defenses in a situation where you have an injured third party who that insurance may have been bought to protect under the financial responsibility laws. And if I'm wrong about that, you want me to go talk about the facts, you can stop me. But I think that's why we're here to discuss that issue, so I want to launch into that. First and foremost, I'd like to point out that this issue was teed up by the court. Justice Kern put it right in a footnote, and there is a body of law out there that may or may not be applicable to this case, because we don't know, to your point, Justice Devaney, when we went back to the trial court in this case, nothing was put into the record about whether the particular policy of insurance in this case fits within the confines of the financial responsibility laws. I don't know whether it does or it doesn't, and I believe it was their burden to do that in order to resist summary judgment if that was the tact they were going to take, and that is not the tact they took. But if we are going to talk about that, I mean, Justice Salter in the first oral argument this morning talked about how it's important to parse the statute. I mean, that's where we start. And if you look at 323574, subsection 1, which contains the language that it appears some courts have latched onto in an effort to suggest that when it's a policy of insurance issued pursuant to a Financial Responsibility Act, you don't have a right to essentially assert a lack of coverage. And there are two clauses in Section 1 that I think are important, and I think they have to be read together. The language that the 11 words that the courts have hung on are the very last 11 words in Section 1. They say, no violation of said policy shall defeat or void said policy. I don't know what that means, to be honest with you. I don't know what a violation of a policy is. Looking at the cases that have discussed it, it would appear that they have taken the position a violation of the policy is basically anything that would allow the insurance company to deny coverage. And that, to me, seems like a bridge too far, just like it has for a lot of other courts. But the reason I don't think the policy or the language can be read that way is if you look up further in that section, it says covered by said motor vehicle liability policy. It's virtually the same type of language we see in 58.23.1, which says, under the terms of the policy, both statutes reference covered by the policy or under the terms of the policy. And I think it bears mentioning that if what the legislature intended to do was to say, we don't care if it's covered under the policy. If the policy is issued, and it's issued because of the financial responsibility laws, you're going to pay if somebody gets hurt. If that was the intent, this isn't how they would say it, in my opinion. And I think it bears mentioning that when you do look at the courts out there that have looked at this issue, and I came prepared to offer a rule because I assumed that you'd be looking for one. The court in New York, and I think this may be the first time in my career I've cited to a New York court and said I think they've got it right. What they talk about is they say the injured party. So in this case, it's really, you've seen from the record, there was communication going on here between the subrogated insurer and Liberty Mutual. It was a classic, we think you should have to pay us back for what we had to pay. Liberty's saying a couple of things. Number one, hey, look, all the information we've got at this point suggests that this was intentional, which would mean it was excluded under our policy. But more importantly, we can't even get our insured to talk to us, including going and knocking on her door in California and having the door slammed in their face. So what the New York court says is the injured party, which in this case would be Mr. Nooney's client, has the burden of proving that she or her counsel acted diligently in attempting to ascertain the identity of the carrier and thereafter expeditiously notify the carrier. And that would be notification of the accident or notification of the suit, both of which are required under policies. And Justice DeVaney, you stole my thunder a little bit. I was going to point out what you pointed out. This policy does not say that the insured has to notify. I think it somewhat, you know, for purposes of this case, somewhat ideally says the person seeking to benefit from this policy needs to notify. And in this case, it fits this New York rule perfectly. The New York rule isn't saying we're not going to, they're not saying we're going to let an insurer out for a technical violation. What they're saying is, first and foremost, if you're going to come and you're going to seek coverage under this policy, you need to have some level of diligence to find out who that insurer is. And when you find out who they are, give them the notice they need in order to be able to act. They had everything they needed here. And that's where I do want to touch on this idea of questions of material fact, because I don't think there are any. What comes up frequently is conflating the terms notice of the loss and notice of the suit, two completely different things. We had notice of the loss. We have never denied that. We had notice of the loss because our own insured who owned that vehicle came to us and said, my daughter wrecked it, pay me. We were obligated to do so. Even if she did it intentionally, we were obligated to do so. He didn't wreck it, she did. We had no defense to that. So that was a completely different type of coverage. We had knowledge of the accident. We had knowledge of the accident when the insurer that had the subrogation claim contacted us and said, we think you should now pay under your liability coverage for what we had to pay. Knowledge of the accident. What did we do? We went and investigated, or tried to. Went out and tried to talk to the insured in California, got the door slammed in the face, essentially said, hey, we're denying everything we've got right now tells us this was an intentional act, and by the way, she's not cooperating. It was raised in the brief or argued in the brief that, well, you didn't say you were denying because you didn't have notice of the suit. How could we? The suit didn't occur until a year later. We didn't know anything more. What we said to them is, if you're going to proceed with this, let us know. Something that I don't think you should even have to say. I mean, frankly, I think that the rule should be, if you know who they are, much like, frankly, Rosso, if we're gonna draw an analogy, if you know who they are and you want to benefit from that policy, then you better give them notice so that they have an opportunity. That was the extent of our knowledge and notice. So those are the undisputed facts. It doesn't matter whether Bianca Spotted Thunder actually got the papers or not. I'm not here making some technical argument that Bianca Spotted Thunder isn't the one who gave us the papers and therefore we don't have an obligation. I think that would be a bridge too far. In other words, if the facts of this case were different, and if the insurer in this case or their counsel had sent copies of the suit papers to Liberty Mutual and said, we have now sued your insured, you better reply. And our response would be, well, wait a minute. Our policy says that we need to get that from our insured, not from you. And they haven't given it to us, so we're going to be able to deny coverage now. I'll even take it a step further on the cooperation clause. That's not the reason why this suit is where it's at. The court mentioned it in the lower court, but I have practiced my entire life doing third-party defense work, and I can't count the number of times that I've had an insured that I'm asked to represent by an insurance company who not only doesn't cooperate with me, they don't even talk to me. Now, if that person ran a stop sign drunk, which those facts occur, I don't even think about, nor has any insurance company I've ever been asked to defend on behalf of, think about trying to say, well, our lucky day, you're telling me they won't talk to you? Well, I guess we're out. You know, we're going to deny coverage, and now we're not going to have to deal with this. Why? Because they're not prejudiced by that, okay? They're not prejudiced by the fact that the person who was obviously drunk isn't talking to the defense attorney. I have no defense. There's nothing I can do with that. And it's that prejudice rule that New York and some of these other states apply that I think is appropriate. In fact, Texas says that an insurer is prejudiced as a matter of law if you take that default judgment against them before giving them any kind of notice. And I want you to think about this if we take it in the context of, because I've been running the parade of horribles in my head, Section 74, the language there, if that is taken at face value in the way that I would suggest the Missouri courts have done it, it's not just conditions precedent. It's basically saying you can't use some defense under the policy to get out of paying. So change the facts of this case a little bit. Let's say these are undisputed. Bianca Spotted Thunder, while working for somebody that offers rides for a fee, provides a ride for a fee after taking her father's vehicle without his permission, after he told her she couldn't take the vehicle, and then decides during the course of taking that person on the ride, she wants to harm herself or maybe the person who's riding with her and drives headlong into a semi, and add to the fact that it was a motorcycle she took, a two-wheeled vehicle, not a four-wheeled vehicle. I've just hit five exclusions in that policy, five things that no insurance company would ever bargain to insure in an indemnity setting for the rates that they're being paid. That's why those exclusions are there. And this rule would suggest that even if we had notice, even if they gave us notice, we couldn't come in and start a deck action, which this court has countenanced for decades. I mean, that's the rule. Don't just deny it. Start a deck action. Go find out whether you have that obligation. This rule, if you read 74 that way, would say, save your deck action. There's nothing that's going to get you out from under this. Even if you can prove all of that, you have to pay. The thing that I think makes it the most egregious in this particular instance, if you look at it closely, and counsel brought up Rosso, or Rosso, I don't know how it's said, but they not only took the judgment without giving Liberty notice of the suit, but then they sat on it for 360 days and then started this action. Now, why is that significant? Well, if you look at Rosso, how was Rosso set aside? Rosso was set aside on excusable neglect. One of the items contained in the first three subsections of sub B to Rule 60, right? The three that you can only bring up within 1 year of the time that the judgment gets entered. In this particular case, if I were tasked with going in and trying to set that judgment aside, what would be the one that I would want to use? I mean, what would be the one most applicable? It would be surprise, right? I mean, surprise would be the quintessential way that I would say we are entitled to have this set aside. Now, I'm not sure I could make that argument because the case is against Bianca Spotted Thunder, but if I'm trying to make it somehow through her on Liberty's behalf, I would certainly go to surprise. I'm foreclosed by rule from using surprise because they sat on it. Unlike in Rosso, at least in Rosso, when they took the default, Nancy Chertoff went right to the insurance company and said, I got a default and you need to pay. You know, and then they came in and excusable neglect became the basis for setting that aside. So I want to wrap this up by saying, you know, I know why we're here, I think. I think we're here to look at whether, you know, we're going to develop some type of a rule or a policy that some of these other states have or haven't done. And I simply want to say those policies, I think, have a place, but they have a place where you have an innocent victim. They have a place where you have somebody who's truly an innocent victim. There is nothing innocent about the way this went down. There is nothing innocent about the way this was set up. And back to your comment, Justice Devaney, and the language of this policy, if you're now going to seek the benefit of this policy, it's your obligation to have given us the notice. And when you didn't do that, you're not a victim. You were basically trying to put yourself into a place where it couldn't be defended on coverage or liability. Thank you.
Thank you. Panini, you can proceed with rebuttal.
To touch on some of the points that were addressed by Mr. Heeb, I mean, SDCL 3235-741 has, of course, been interpreted by many different courts. The United States District Court for the District of South Dakota, Western Division, and State Farm Mutual Auto Insurance versus American Concept Insurance essentially dealt with a question of whether or not a misrepresentation on a policy then vitiated the coverage after an injured party was injured. In that case, the court determined that there was a genuine issue of material fact in dispute as it concerns the alleged misrepresentation on the application for insurance. It is appellant's position that it's akin, based on cooperation, to a misrepresentation, because ultimately the public policy behind such statute is to prohibit the injured party from just not having any remedy or insurance company not indemnifying.
I'm not, counsel, I keep going back to this, but that statute only applies to policies as are defined in that chapter. And it does not appear, your opposing counsel pointed out, you didn't bring forth any factual evidence in response to the summary judgment motion to show that it was one of those types of policies. It has to be certified per the statutes that apply.
I want to make sure I understand your question. Justice,
well, you seem to be arguing that it just applies to all liability policies, which is not how it's defined in that chapter. Are you?
I mean, it's a question of first impression before this court, so I can't cite to any South Dakota law by the South Dakota Supreme Court. I mean, it seems applicable here, but again, I understand Mr. Heeb has a different view of the subpart specifically related to 3235-74 subpart 1. But other states have essentially said, I mean, it's absolute liability is what they refer to it, or as liability freezing to prohibit the insured after the fact. Because if this court says, well, you know, insurance companies can do this, well, they can come up with an exclusion or an alleged misrepresentation. And at the end of the day, from a public policy perspective, that then just punishes the injured party. The Supreme Court of Nevada in Torres versus Nevada Direct Insurance dealt with a similar issue where there was a default judgment obtained. Then there was a suit brought against Nevada Direct Insurance Company. And essentially, the court in that case stated that the insurer cannot circumvent the state's absolute liability statute. And more importantly, that they essentially held that there can't be just a post-injury violation of the policy that allows the insurer to come in and say, we have no obligation to indemnify. And here, Mr. Heeb brought up the denial aspect and said, you know, we would have came in after the fact. Well, there wasn't just a reservation or rights letter issued. There was a complete denial. At that point, if there's a denial, I don't know what Liberty Mutual thought they had an obligation to do to represent their insured in some suit, because they said, we're denying the claim. They didn't give a reservation or rights letter to say, these are the things we are or are not going to do, and or at some point we may issue a denial letter. They just issued a denial letter. With going back to the Torres versus Nevada Direct Insurance Company, the Court of Supreme Court of Nevada essentially then talked about the common law. And initially, the common law was essentially that an insurer was allowed to rescind an insurance policy for material representations made in acquisition of the policy or for breach of the insurance contract. Again, I believe it's analogous, because ultimately, at the end of the day, what carries is the public policy reason behind the statute, meaning whether it be, again, a misrepresentation at the time of application, such was in the district court case that I cited, where the wife did not provide information that her husband lived in the same household. He had multiple DWI convictions. He then, about 2 years later, was involved in an accident. The injured party, Ulmer, then ultimately would have been the party that had no recourse in the event the insurer just said, well, based on this misrepresentation, we believe that we have no obligation to indemnify the injured party, and there that was Ulmer. For these reasons, the appellants, Kaiser Trucking and David Simons, would respectfully request that this court reverse the lower court's decision granting motion for summary judgment in favor of Liberty Mutual Fire Insurance Company. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted, and we'll be in recess.